Good evening. Good evening and welcome to Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric, the best podcast in town. Makes your movies fight against each other for our entertainment. Tonight we have a great one. Elektra going up against Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. Enjoy, everybody. Box Office Battles.
Hi, I'm Chili Dilly, the personality pickle.
Hi, I'm Greg, and I'm a nerd.
You must be kidding, aren't you?
I have never seen anything like this.
The worst part has been watching the actual watching of the movie.
Some of these were pretty terrible.
Yeah, they are pretty terrible. This is Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric here with another of our bad films. We try to do this once a season, maybe more so if the duty calls and we must deal with the duty. But that's what we have tonight is bad Marvel films. With me is Eric. How is it going tonight?
Hello, Greg. Nice to be here. You are really. Let me just start off.
Handsome.
You are really good looking. And I've always wondered why. It's got to be genetics. Nothing you did to earn it or deserve it. No, you are really like typecasting us as like two dudes who will like watch shitty movies just to entertain other people.
It's getting that way. I mean, we've watched some good ones and I think we cover some good genres, but I think
we did watch some good ones. Madam Web was one.
You're gonna die on that cross. You're just gonna live up there.
You guys are, yeah, listen, bunch of haters. We had this friend when I was back in my band days where I didn't have a real job, and me and two of my, well, some at all times two of my bandmates, but at sometimes three of my bandmates all had a house together. And it was just a typical like rental party house and nobody was really doing anything worthwhile. But we had this guy that would hang out with us and he would always be like wanting to be the life of the party. So he'd be like, anybody bet me $20, I won't sniff some like crushed red pepper.
That guy.
And I just always wanted to pull him aside and go, Pete, people like you, without all of this incessant need to like humiliate yourself just to be part of the crew. Like you don't have to do that to yourself and stoop to that level because you think people are going to like you more. And I think of Pete often as we watch these shitty movies and do a podcast about them and think, if only I had taken my own advice and not humiliated myself and put myself through this just so that other people might like me. But that decision was already made. So we're going to get into it tonight, aren't we?
We are. Well, the primary goal of Box Office Battles was to create a bracket and let movies go head to head to determine which is the best in any given genre. But we've delved into some bad films. And now we're dealing with a whole genre in itself of bad Marvel films, not just bad superhero films. Marvel has made at least 8 stinkers, if not more, in mixed with all the good ones that they've done. So we've had to sort out the worst 8 of those, and we've already gone through 2 battles. We're going to do another one tonight, and we'll look at the bracket real quick here. So we've had X-Men Dark Phoenix was the loser, considered worst over Madam Web. Basically,
damn right it was.
Basically, Eric's decision, because I really didn't care. I think they both suck. And then last week, Morbius was the clear loser over Howard the Duck. I mean, Howard, they're both bad, but Morbius is in a class by itself. And I think there might be a contender tonight. I feel there might be a contender for Morbius's crown. So tonight we're going to have Elektra with Jennifer Garner, a spinoff of the movie Daredevil, going up against the 4 seed in Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. So this is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about the first female-led Marvel film in Elektra, and then Nick Cage at his Nick Cagiest, doing Ghost Rider. So that's what we have in store for tonight. Before we get into that, though, I do want to say welcome again to Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. If you want to reach out to us and talk about any of the topics that we discuss on any of the movies that we have, suggest a genre for us to cover, and just to tell us we suck, that's cool too. You can email us at boxofficebattles@gmail.com. You can also watch our live streams on Twitch at Box Office Battle Pod, and you can check out our channel on YouTube at Box Office Battle Podcast, and you can also catch us on Facebook at Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. And we want to let you know you can also listen to the podcast on any podcast provider, Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcast, and so many others. You can email us if you want a list. Otherwise, just pick one of those three I gave you. Make sure you subscribe on any and all of the platforms. Leave a comment. Let us know what's going on. And you never know, these total unknown movie review guys might just reach out to you and say, hey. So, before we get into the movies, I wanted to just do a quick let you know about something, because I'm a TV junkie, and lately, since COVID, in my opinion, TV has not been great. It's gotten a few good shows, but there's been no Breaking Bads for me. There's been no like massive, oh, you got to watch this. Back in the day, I watched Sopranos, that kind of thing. Dexter was good for a while. And I'm just like, some of the shows I watch are just like, ho-hum. There's a couple of really good ones out there. Severance is up there, but I would say there's nothing that's like must watch. And I found a show this week, my wife and I did. I'd been hearing a lot about it. I checked it out, and I do want to recommend it to you, Eric, if you get a chance. I don't know if you have Apple TV or not, but it's Widow's Bay, and this is not a sponsorship by any stretch of the imagination. This
brought
is me
to you by the people who made... Whatever. All right. So they live in a...
It is like nothing you've ever seen. It's got elements of other shows, but it blends together really well. Stephen Root is in this, Matthew Reese, and a few other people that you might or might not recognize. But it takes place in like the 80s on an island off the coast of Massachusetts. And a lot of spooky shit happens on this island.
They already made this. It's called What About Bob?
I guess. No, so. This is a blend of a dark comedy, horror, a really great acting, great dialogue. The screenplays are amazing. I just like find myself falling into this. If you ever liked a show like Northern Exposure or anything like when we did the Twin Peaks stuff, it's actually Twin Peaks, but not as hallucinogenic inducing. It's very straightforward, but it's got this small town quirkiness about it that makes it funny. The characters are great. I wholeheartedly recommend it to you. Widow's Bay on Apple TV.
Sounds a lot like the serialized Fargo television series, which I really enjoyed.
Yes.
And kind of sounds like it might be similar to that.
I would say that's a good comparison. This has got a little bit more horror into it. So mix that with a little bit of Stephen King's It. It's got just some like small town horror, like urban legends that come to life and the town can't do anything about it. And the mayor is stuck trying to unsolve all of these mysteries. We every episode, my wife and I, we're hooked. We get mad when it's over because then we got to wait another week. That's the one thing I would say. I should have waited until all the episodes were out, because I think there's going to be 10 episodes this year, and episode 8 came out tonight, and it's like, it's a slog to wait for that next week because it's really good.
They really spoiled us with those few series that they put out all at the same time, and you could binge it all in one weekend. I would have to do the same thing with Andor. Just look at Disney Plus and go, well, there's only one episode waiting for me. I'll be done with that in 40 minutes. Yeah. And then what? So,
exactly.
You know, you just have to like make yourself withhold from watching it. Well, maybe I will check it out. Maybe I won't. If I do, I'll let you know.
Right. Well, and that's for the rest of the audience too. I really would love to see this show keep going because it is a gem. But what isn't a gem are bad Marvel movies, and that's what we're covering right now on the bracket. We've already recapped where we're at, and we're at Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance versus Elektra. Now, on the surface, I was comparing both of these movies, and they have a lot of things in common, believe it or not. one of the things they don't have in common is one is actually watchable and the other one's not, in my opinion. But they have a lot of similarities, and we're going to discuss that tonight. But we're going to kick it off with the Jennifer Garner-led spinoff of the movie with Ben Affleck, Daredevil, called Elektra, that came out, when did Elektra come out, 2005?
2005, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah, this movie was awesome, dude.
It was.
Yeah. What was wrong with this one? I can't wait to hear you just hate for hate's sake.
How did you know? Okay, so I said one of them was better than the other, and you automatically assume I hate this one?
No, but you said you said that this was not very good. It was boring or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I did say that last week, I guess. Okay, so you are listening to me. I will take it. I might have said last week or when we discussed about these films that one was boring. So have you seen the 2003 Daredevil with Ben Affleck? And
no, I haven't. And you can stop asking me questions like that because it only makes me feel bad and it lets the viewers and listeners know that I can't be trusted to watch movies, and therefore what I say about the movies also can't be trusted. And I don't want them to think that. I want them to think I'm so smart and I know everything there is to. So although I didn't see Daredevil 2003, do you think that it would have helped my enjoyment of this movie had I seen it?
I think it would have hurt.
Oh,
I think it would have hurt because even though Daredevil 2003 is not a great film, it's not horrible in the, you know, superhero genre. It's not a horrible film. It's serviceable. Ben Affleck is a okay Daredevil. They really try to make it like everybody, because the studio involvement, everything had to be like Batman. Batman had to be dark and brooding. So they kind of take Daredevil and they make him this dark, depressing movie where, you know, he's in the middle of the night hunting bad guys. But in the movie, he meets Elektra Natchios, which is one of the best lines in the movie, is done by Jon Favreau, who plays his sidekick in Daredevil. And he says, what's her name? And Daredevil says, her name is Elektra Natchios. And Jon Favreau says, it sounds like a Mexican appetizer. So it's the movie's not bad. It's got some humor in it, and she's serviceable as Elektra as well. It's decent. And I think if you'd seen that and got any type of enjoyment out of the Elektra film, then you probably, this one would be a letdown compared
what
to
is,
that.
What is, give me a quick backstory. Please try to make it quick. Daredevil. Is he like jumping over the fountains at Caesar's Palace, or
no,
he's jumping over the Grand Canyon on a motorcycle, or what's he doing?
So interestingly enough, I did bring some comics with me, as I've been doing for this series, and I do have a Daredevil comic right here. I do have read Daredevil, The Man Without Fear, you see there on the screen. And it's got Elektra on it. It's got Elektra on it as well. That's why I picked this one. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, Daredevil as a young boy, his father was a boxer and was killed when he didn't throw a fight. He was supposed to fight for the mob around the same time. Daredevil was blinded by toxic chemicals in a construction accident. And
funny how that happens.
He lost his sight, and all his other senses were heightened. And in the comics, a martial arts expert who was also blind takes him under his wing, teaches him all kinds of stuff, and he grows up using his ability of sonar, you know, to sense things around him, similar to Bat Morbius that we covered in another episode. Yeah,
cool location.
But
they
Daredevil
made it a point to make the
exactly
viewer feel so stupid.
Daredevil did it first, and so he ends up, he becomes a lawyer by day, and then when the criminals he tries to put away do not get justice, he goes out at night and he deals out his own justice. So that's Daredevil. Ben Affleck plays him in the original film. Right now, there is a Disney Plus version with Vincent D'Onofrio as the bad guy, as the kingpin. I recommend it. It's not bad. Check out the Netflix version. I think they're up to 4 seasons now. Anyway, Elektra was a love interest of Daredevil, and that's Elektra's like first issue. And as a matter of fact, just to show you, I got that bad puppy here too.
Oh, look at that!
Yeah, I also
these seem a lot newer than the like ones you were showing us before. Is this a new series?
This is November of 1996, so about 30 years ago.
Okay, you can say 1996 is 30 years ago. I don't believe that. However, I'm just saying, like, within the frame of reference of comic books at large,
yeah,
Superman and Batman are very, very old. But, like, is Daredevil as a character and as a series more of a modern, like, 80s, 90s type thing?
Yeah, late 70s, I believe. I'd have to Google it when Daredevil came out. But I'd say at the earliest, late 60s, but definitely just, like, mid-70s is when I believe he came out. But Elektra actually made her debut in like 76, if I'm not mistaken, but this was like her first solo comic.
Oh, okay.
And this is the variant issue. So I've got the one that's on screen there and I've got this rare one.
Ooh. Oh, and this looks like the kind of thing that was made to make little boys' pants get all horny and weird.
You could say that. I never found it that way. I think it, while the like we got Elektra up on the screen, while that she definitely, you know, pictured as sexy, I just, when I was reading comics, that never came into my mind. Maybe it did for some other people. I was just in it for the action sequences and the heroes. And
Aren't you the same guy that tried to order X-ray glasses from the back of a comic book because you were so horny all the time?
It wasn't to see female superheroes. It was to see regular women.
Oh, it's nice that I was just a little kind of compartmentalized your two worlds.
Just a little pervert, that was all.
Wanting to see women naked against their will and also really leaning heavy into the story of the comic books.
Technically I was 8. I wouldn't have known what to do if I could have seen him with those X-ray glasses. I probably would have passed out. But yeah, so this is from 96. Her history goes back in the comics. She was an assassin. She's Greek heritage. And eventually she meets Daredevil and joins up with him. Eventually she's killed by a character named Bullseye, which is one of the most biggest deaths in comics. And then eventually brought back to life and she becomes a changed person, which is kind of where the movie takes place. In spoiler alert, in the movie 2003 Daredevil with Ben Affleck, Jennifer Garner, who plays Elektra, gets killed and by Bullseye, played by Colin Farrell, played really well by Colin Farrell, I will say. And in this new one, apparently she's resurrected. They don't really go into details on how, she just is.
Maybe it's a prequel.
They never say. That's the problem. There was Ben Affleck was supposed to do a cameo. They have like the guy that plays her mentor in this, the Terrence Stamp, who was General Zod, if you remember in the Superman movies. I don't know if you remember. Superman movies. You know, Neil Before Me Zod. So yeah. Terrence Stamp plays Stick, a blind martial arts expert who is kind of Jennifer Garner's mentor. Well, oddly enough, he's Daredevil's real mentor in the comic books, even though he's not in the original Daredevil movie. So it's like you tie in Daredevil with Stick, but then you don't mention Daredevil, and you're trying to distance yourself, but you don't talk about how she got resurrected. It's just...
Is this a matter of comic book nerd picking apart how they didn't get it exactly right, or is this like really some major leaving out really important parts of the story?
I think that the fact that they left Stick out of the Daredevil movie in 2003 was an oversight, but they didn't need to bring him in here, because even if these would have done well and they would have had more Daredevil and more Elektra movies, then it would have gotten convoluted. I find this is like a lot of things that happened with the early superhero movies, it was where they were trying to do their own thing, where they had Daredevil. They weren't used to what the MCU did later, where all these guys said, hey, let's make all our movies interconnect and have some sort of great continuity so that, hey, if you see Spider-Man this year, next year when you see Iron Man, it's going to make sense. They're going to be a team. And I think with this, every director was trying to do his own thing. And I think the guy who did Elektra basically just wanted to make a comic book movie. And I think studio involvement, script rewriting, I think ended up really kind of jumbling up what this movie was intended to be. And what it became is, in my opinion, a dull as dishwater, nothing of a film. It really does.
I can see that. So I don't know if this is something that it's a phenomenon that is happening in movies in general a lot, but I am noticing it when I watch these comic book films. And that is, I did this with Elektra, paused it and went, how far am I into this movie that nothing has happened? In this case, it was 27 minutes. Mm. I had been waiting around going, well, I don't even know what she does or what she is or like. And you and I have talked before about like one of the catalysts of almost all the superhero comics and stories and movies is like some sort of trauma, or you gain your powers because of XYZ, and then it's kind of up to you as a character as to what you do with those powers and the struggles that you go through with using them for good and evil and all of this stuff. And I was just like 27 minutes into this, and I've watched her rearrange the fruit on her cabinet or on her countertop. I've watched her kind of walk around paranoid around her house. The OCD setting out on all of the toiletries.
Yep. Just in order.
And I don't know. It feels to me like either give me that, give me the catalyst story, and you can take 27 minutes to do that. That's fine. But don't give me 27 minutes of, I mean, I don't even know what it was.
Yeah.
But this movie is only like an hour and 35 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And the second hour was fucking rad, dude.
I'm glad you felt that way.
Man, listen, she's a killer, dude. And she gets put on this assignment to kill these people in this like remote lakeside area.
Yeah.
But dude, she can't do it. When it comes down to it, something inside her has changed.
Oh my God.
And it's at that moment where Elektra kind of starts to become a piece of all of us as we're watching. What, Greg? Why are you laughing at me?
Because you're full of shit. To me, it's one of these things where it could have been all of that. It really could have been. And I think that maybe it was budget, maybe it was director decisions, but it's like you have these opportunities to have a really good comic book fight scene and you peter it away. There's a moment, so there's the one character who's named Tattoo. He has all his tattoo animals that come out of his body. There's a scene where he comes out of a wall as like a hawk or a falcon, whatever. I don't know my birds, but it was one of those. Crow, whatever. And there was an opportunity there for an interesting fight scene, and he basically just flies away. He's just spying on him. And I was like, you had these moments. There was so many moments of course, like you mentioned, the father and daughter that she's assigned to kill. And we all know that that's who she's assigned to kill as soon as she meets them and befriends them. And then she gets her assignment afterwards. And you're like, yeah, like that's a big surprise.
Okay, I didn't see that coming.
You
didn't? Like, I was shocked, I must say. When she opened up the folder and it was like Target A, 13-year-old female, I gasped. And
you're fucking with me.
I was shocked.
You're fucking with
me. I gotta tell you. And I wonder, from that point on, I was like, will the humanity that we all would like to believe is inside all of us, will it prevail within Elektra, given everything she's been through, where she, was boxing in her, no, that was Daredevil. What happened to her? How'd she, what?
Nothing.
I wasn't listening to that.
She was. There's so many flashbacks, And none of them really say anything. That's the one thing that really kills me about this film, is that they go back into her past when she's a little kid and she's swimming and her dad won't let her get out. And then her mom is like, oh, my God. I have a big pet peeve of flashbacks in film in general. I think if you can't show me stuff in the present, don't spend half your movie in the past unless it's really, really, really relevant. Because I've seen films where they use it creatively and, okay, I can deal with your flashbacks. You know, like a Quentin Tarantino out of order sequence and stuff like that, or Memento where it's backwards and that kind of stuff. Those are creative, but just the generic flashbacks of when you were a kid to show trauma. And in this case, I don't even know what the fuck was going on. There's a demon in the bedroom. She's a little girl. It's just a waste of time, in my opinion. And there was so many moments where I felt like my time was being wasted, where she meets the dad and daughter, and it just drags. Nothing happens. Then they finally, the Hand, which is the martial arts group that has been sent to kill the dad and daughter because Elektra won't do it, she gets a little bit of a fight scene, and then they blow up into some green smoke, which is new, and then it just starts to drag again. You get these 1 minute fight scenes between 20 minutes of exposition. And like you said, the movie's only an hour and 30 minutes.
I thought the part where she meets the dad and the kid, and spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen this old ass movie, she's some sort of new karate prodigy or something. The little girl
out of nowhere. Yeah.
But I really think that the part where, you say it drags on, but I thought the part where he went in 4 minutes into his butternut squash soup recipe, reading it ingredient in by ingredient, was really nice.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I guess I have a higher tolerance for being bored, maybe, than you do.
Gosh.
Maybe it's the nature of my work, or maybe it's the nature of my personality. Oh, and we're about to talk about a movie that didn't give you any time to do anything except wonder what the fuck was going on.
Yes. But yeah, we'll get there.
But this one, at the very least, kind of ebbed and flowed in a way that made natural sense of the way, I don't know, life is.
Boring?
That it is.
Tedious?
Yeah, it's boring with some various moments of, you know, badassery mixed in.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Yeah, it was confusing because, yes, I didn't understand what the parents had to do with it, and I didn't understand what the demons in the bedroom as a young girl had to do with it. I didn't really understand, like, did her parents get killed and so blind Miyagi took her in or whatever?
Oh, so you noticed blind Miyagi, huh? For all of those who have not seen the film, and I'm going to say don't see it, just take our word for it. Stick, the character that we mentioned, who is her mentor, when she gets injured, Elektra, he does the whole smacking his hands together thing. Did they think we forgot that Karate Kid existed? Because maybe it's because it was 20 years before this movie. Maybe they forgot that we knew about Miyagi.
Because he made her wax his car. It was all bullshit.
Oh, that's in the deleted.
He was like, no, that just doesn't have anything to do with karate. That's got everything to do with you being gullible and waxing my car for me, you dumbass. But anyway.
That must have been in the deleted scenes, but that would have been perfect. And it's like, and then it comes into play later in the film. And when the girl is hurt, my wife and I are sitting there just cheering for the Miyagi. We're like, give her the Miyagi, give her the Miyagi. And as soon as she goes and claps her hands together and starts rubbing them, I'm like, that's the only part I think I really enjoyed in the film. It's just one slog after another. And it's so stereotypical and cliched of superhero films, because you get the introduction of the villains, which is just in the mysterious office with all the bad guys, harump harump, we're all sitting here plotting our evil deeds, and then
with all of the color sucked out of the film.
As you can see in the image here, it had this weird color palette to it, either a lot of shadows. it just, all that did was make me want to fall asleep even more. I was having, like we talked about last week, where you were struggling to get through Howard the Duck. I was struggling to watch this again. I watched it 20 years ago, and I remembered the boredom. And so I thought, maybe things would be different. Maybe I'll enjoy it. I watched Daredevil to get ready for it. And I'm like, you know what? This wasn't a horrible film. It was all right. And then I put this on. And even my wife, who is a huge Jennifer Garner fan, she started out so optimistic. And like you said, after the first 20 minutes, she was like, is anything going to happen in this film?
Well, you had to have been able to answer that in the affirmative, because something always happens in a movie. It did True. Feel like teaching a 13-year-old to drive a stick shift car, where it was kind of herky jerky and weird, and the car dies multiple times, and kind of you got to spend some time. Start, okay, now push the clutch, and no, brake and the clutch. Okay, now start. Like, there was a lot of that. Okay, now let off of the clutch. Not too much gas, not too much gas. Well, you got to give it more than that. It did feel like that at times. Yeah. I guess. Maybe I've, like, within my own subconscious, like, lowered the threshold for my expectations for these movies based on the four we already saw. Because I sit here and go, I mean, this isn't any stupider than anything else we've watched. And I get that we're watching eight bad movies, but, like, this one didn't seem particularly bad to me.
That's a good point. I'll give you that.
Okay. Well, I mean, I make good points every now and then. I appreciate you recognizing
that. Well, the reason I give you that is that on the surface, there's nothing wrong with this film other than it is insanely boring. The other films are bad, but they're I don't find them boring. I just find them bad. Like, I find them hard to watch from an aesthetic point of view, where the acting is bad and the CGI is bad and the plot lines are just convoluted and stupid. This was a nothing burger of a film that it and honestly, I think the director, I can sense with these, like, on the screen here, I've got the dream sequence or the flashback sequence where she goes into her mom's bedroom and there's a demon there and kills her mom, and it's all, everything's all white and what the hell. And
yeah, demon and, getting after that ass.
Well, it's like, I think the director really thought he was making some sort of masterpiece. He went on record as saying that he wanted to do something like Batman and other films like that, other superhero films like that, that were more of a case study of trauma and dealing with pain. And it was like, dude, you were pretentious, really. The amount of slow motion. The movie's already slow enough. We don't need you slowing the frames of the film down to make it even slower. There's so much slow motion that was unnecessary. Flashbacks, slow motion, and it kills. There's nothing interesting to see. And anything that he did that was that had halfway any interest about it, he just half-assed it, in my opinion. The tattoo guy. You got a guy. Here's a picture of the white, all-white bedroom where her mother dies that comes into play later in one of the most exciting fight scenes ever that reminds me of having to fold laundry.
I was going to say, of all of the movies I've ever seen that had a 15 sheets flying around,
what the this hell was the sheets?
God, and man. So,
yeah.
Wouldn't you know it, our main antagonist is wearing white sheet clothing, not that kind of white sheet clothing.
that might have been more interesting, to be honest with you.
It's gone the KKK in like 1928. Yeah, that would have been awesome. But yeah, and so there is a point in the movie in slow-mo where he's like flying over her and she looks up. But now what? Because there's not one sheet up there. There's a bunch of sheets up there. And she goes to stab through one of the sheets, and guess what?
Yeah.
Not the right sheet. I do get it. And listen, we established early in this podcast that you're the one who knows about movies. You have had a lifelong obsession with it. You went back to school totally unrelated to the line of work that you do to get a master's degree, an advanced degree in film, because that's how much not only you like film, but that's how much it means to you. And that's how much you care about it as an art. And so we establish that to establish you as the expert and me as the dickhead who doesn't know anything. And I want to believe you about these things, but then you start talking crap about movies that are perfectly fine. This movie's fine. There's nothing wrong. Why is this movie? Why does this movie get a?
I think it's 4.7. Yeah.
And like,
cause it's shit. I mean, it's so bad that Jennifer Garner, in all the interviews she did to promote the film, said that, I hate this movie. This is the worst thing I ever did. She said it during the press tour.
Oh, boo-hoo!
She's like, this is the worst movie I've ever made, and the only reason I did it is because I was contractually obligated after Daredevil to do it. She basically came out and went, don't go see this movie. And she knew it was bad.
She's being as pretentious as you are.
No, the director is who is pretentious. I'm saying.
Okay. That, yeah, so tell me what you know about this guy, Rob Bowman. What do we know about him? What makes you think?
Well, I will.
He thought he was making an opus.
Because he said as much as that, you know, that he wanted to make this, he says this is the best film he ever did. And if you look at his resume, I guess that would be true because the only thing that's on his resume that I actually like is the movie called Reign of Fire.
I've heard of this show called The Rookie where he directed one episode 7 years ago.
Yeah. The Rookie so since Elektra, if you look at his IMDb, he's done nothing but TV.
Oh no. They don't let him.
No, they don't let him touch the remote anymore. He's the guy that's like, just keep him on TV from now on. And now, before that,
most of this shit.
Reign of Fire is a decent film. I actually like Reign of Fire. See, it's 6.2. That's the one with Matthew McConaughey and Matt Damon, I believe, where they're fighting dragons in apocalyptic England. Must see if you haven't seen it. It's a lot of fun. And I didn't know he directed that, or I definitely would have thought that Elektra would have been a better film.
He did some X-Files. How can you direct one episode of Baywatch? Just one? Like, you were so... Like, wasn't that show on for 500 episodes?
Telling me I don't know how that works.
You directed one, and they never thought, why don't we call...
Rob Bowman.
Rick Bowman back and see what he's up to.
Rick Bowman.
Or...
yeah.
Whatever. Maybe MacGyver, one episode. He directed one episode of MacGyver. One episode of 21 Jump Street. Like, how...
How bad
do you have to be?
He might have been ogling the Baywatch girls. That's why he didn't get asked back. But he did quite a few episodes, 34 episodes of The X-Files, which is a lot of people knew him for that when it came out. And that's how he got like the gig to do Reign of Fire. But this was his follow-up to Reign of Fire. And my understanding, and so I'll give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. I think he had a grander movie in mind, but Sony held the purse strings a little tight. So anything that was interesting, I think it's like when I watch a TV show and I want to watch some certain movies where there's so much dialogue that feels like filler, that means the movie doesn't have an action film, I should say, doesn't have that big of a budget. And so you're saving up your set pieces to intersperse in the film because you can't shoot your load all in the beginning. And they drag because you don't have the budget.
I can't.
Well, some people don't shoot their load all in the beginning. And I think that's what happened here. I've read, you know, looking up things about this movie to kind of educate myself before we talked about it, that he wanted it to be R-rated. He wanted it to be darker, grittier, have more of an assassin impact. But what he does is you have this thing where you have this assassin that uses these two cool sides. And, you know, she flips him around. She throws him through people. She's like, was it Raphael on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? So she's got these things. And then the whole opening sequence is just a guy talking about her. And the other guy standing outside the door going, she's coming. She's coming. We don't get anything. And that tells me you don't have money for anything. Because your whole opening fight sequence is a narration of a guy that she eventually throws a knife through. And that, to me, is boring.
Did this end up rated R?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, PG-13. Yeah. Oh, he wanted it to
he
be
He wanted it R. to be, yeah, he wanted it to be R.
It's like, well, how many more F-words do I have to put into it?
I think it was for violence, to be honest, and they wouldn't let it happen. You know, if you know the story of Deadpool, and it'll come up again in our next film, the story of Deadpool with Ryan Reynolds was, Deadpool was a comic book character that was completely over-the-top violent. It was the most violent character in Marvel Comics. Also, kind of had a lot of adult language in there that they would kind of bleep out with, you know, asterisks and all that good stuff. But it was there and it was implied. And Ryan Reynolds was a huge fan of Daredevil, and he wanted to make that movie, you know, that character into a movie. And instead, 20th Century Fox said, you know, F that, and we're not going to let him talk. And Ryan Reynolds got to play him, but then they sewed his mouth shut halfway through the film, and it fucking sucked. And it just enraged every fanboy comic out there. And so eventually, Ryan Reynolds shot a whole bunch of test footage for the Deadpool movie he wanted to make. So like a 5-minute teaser, if you will, of him in costume. And somebody leaked it to the internet, and the fans went crazy for it. And what ended up happening was Sony and Fox, who had the rights to Deadpool, decided to let him make that movie because of the response of the fans. But up until that point, you got shit like this, Elektra, where a director says, I want to make an R-rated movie. The studio goes, comic book movies are for kids, not realizing that the majority of comic book owners in the 2000s were 20 to 40 year old men. Fine. But comic books are for kids. I want PG-13. I want family friendly. And you can't do that with a character who is an assassin who kills people with knives.
Yeah, you water it down so much, and the kids still don't give a shit. Like, Eller wouldn't have liked this movie. I mean, he's 11. Will you stop saying that? You're pissing me off.
It is. So they have all these great characters that they could have used. This is a picture of the Rogue's villains that they bring in, and they do absolutely nothing interesting with them. This is for the kids. These weird superheroes that you don't know how they got their powers, so maybe they're mutants like the X-Men, and they're knockoffs of real Marvel characters, and they're a shell of what the character in the comics is.
There's well, did you no need a full exposition of every minor character in this thing, or what?
Well, they shouldn't have been minor characters. You could have had one or two that had at least more character development, since you spend the time wasting on the bratty kid for half the film.
Nobody had any character development in this thing.
Not really.
Nobody.
No.
But no. Maybe that's an allegory.
Yeah. You know,
I have no idea. Rick Bowman was onto something here. Rick.
That nobody needs to be introduced. That all of us are just symbols. We're metaphors of people. We're not real people.
Like, at a metaphysical level, yeah. I think what he's trying to say with this brilliant film, Elektra, is that oftentimes, even when we want to develop as people, and right. even when we know that things need to change, change is hard. Change is hard for everyone. And you're not just going to change in an hour and 37 minutes. That would be great if you could, but it's not realistic. And so setting realistic goals about, you know, recognizing the things that you want to change and thinking about the steps you're going to take to do that, I think is really important. And I think that's what this movie really touched on, is the importance of, I don't know, I just bullshit. Rick didn't know what he was doing.
I was falling asleep there, just like I did during Elektra.
You know, which was more boring, Elektra or me? trying to piece it together.
It was close. It was close. It was like neck and neck.
50-50. So I mean, I get it. It's boring. I just didn't find it so, like, ostentatiously, like, in my face bad. I mean, it may have been boring, but it.
You look at the reviews on that 4.7 on IMDb, you'll see the majority of them are just like, it's just a nothing movie. It is nothing. You could have filmed me taking a shit for 90 minutes and it would have been the same result. There's nothing that you take away from this film that you'll remember. And anything that you could have, they just completely destroyed. There's one character that I did want to mention is Typhoid. She's the one that blows kisses to people and gives them disease, Typhoid. Well, she's based on a character in Marvel Comics called Typhoid Mary. And
Typhoid Mary is a real person.
What it is. Mean, it character? Is. There's also there's a real person, Typhoid Mary, for sure. Sorry, but there is also I know. So I've got a couple of images up on screen. This is Typhoid Mary from the comics. And what's so interesting about Typhoid Mary is that she's got these psychokinetic abilities, but she's also bipolar. She was one of the first like bipolar characters in Marvel. And so she deals with split personality disorder,
DEI,
and she but she is seriously.
Please, nobody email me.
Yeah, but if you ever seen Typhoid Mary in the comics, you know that she's a much better character than what they do with her. They don't even let her talk in Elektra. It says maybe three words. It's horrible. And when you see that, you're just like, oh, what a waste of an opportunity. Of a great character. She is in the television show on Disney or Netflix or wherever. I think it's Netflix. The Iron Fist. And she guests that. They do a really good job with her character on that. But not in Elektra. I would imagine
that they were trying to do the same thing that Madame Web was trying to do. And they unceremoniously ripped it out of their hands. And we never got to see. But like... they introduced these three teenage girls who I would assume had that movie done well, would have had their own thing. You know, we just like kick the can down the line forever because every character gets something. But maybe that's what they were doing. Like, had this movie gone like gonzo bonkers, then maybe we would have had a Typhoid Mary. We would have found out that the reason that she's the way she is because she had typhoid fever and she was like stuck on an island like Roosevelt Island in New York where they used to keep people like that.
It's possible. I
don't know.
It's disappointing because, again, you got a decent character that you could really work with as a villain. You fill it up with, like, these five henchmen, and you really just let them be cannon fodder. They just get destroyed. You have the guy that's, like, Steel, and he, you know, he's basically impenetrable, that he just gets nerfed by a tree. So it's just like, what the hell? I mean,
I think that's kind of an allegory that Rick was trying to make about the power of nature.
Oh, goodness gracious.
In the end, despite all of our attempts at prolonging life and the search for, you know, potions that would, you know, keep you alive forever, that in the end, it will be the trees, that outlast all of us.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I guess
I didn't come into tonight thinking that I was just going to play this role of like trying to defend Jack Bowman from your unceremonious attacks. But I don't think he deserves what you're trying to put him through right now.
Well, he's
if you're listening, Rob, I just want you to know, is that his real name, Rob?
That's his real name.
So listen, Ronaldo, if you're out there and you're listening, I'm on your side on this. And you got screwed over when they only let you direct one episode of Baywatch. You got screwed over when they only let you do one episode of MacGyver, one episode of Quantum Leap. So I'm real sad. One episode of Charles in Charge.
It tells me he never got asked back. It was like, all right, that's it. Let's move on.
It was unfair to him.
He had an episode of Charles in Charge where the bed sheets attacked him. He's just chopping them, and he's trying to do the laundry, and it's just Charles in Charge, man. It's what a silly guy. That's what it is. Baywatch, they had sand creatures that came up, like snakes, and they were an allegory for the phallic nature of all the male lifeguards that were going after the female lifeguards. So he didn't get out.
Okay, I'm glad that you appreciate kind of, because honestly, Baywatch kind of goes back to, like, I wouldn't say Roman mythology as much, but I mean, I see a lot of parallels to like some of the ancient Greek classics.
Well, yeah, like, okay,
like Elektra.
Elektra's Greek, yes.
Right. That, see how I
You came back. You brought it back full circle. That's good.
All right. Well, I mean, what else do you have to say about Elektra? It was boring.
That's the best thing. That's the best compliment I can give it to you. Is it as bad as Morbius from that standpoint? Maybe not. But I don't know if, to me, if something is boring and it insults me more because they think it's good. Because it was really like you strung together a bunch of really boring dialogue scenes that meant nothing with a few decent action sequences. You wasted cool villains that could have been neat, and you just gave them 2 seconds of screen time. The only thing I could say is, yeah, go ahead.
Morbius, I know it suffered from the same thing. That is what you're saying, and I agree with you. But it was so much more masturbatory and pretentious.
I agree.
And just... you know, smelling own fart syndrome.
I agree.
Ridiculous. Okay.
The good thing for Elektra is that she did move on. She does do a cameo, a pretty cool one, in the Deadpool Wolverine film, which was Ryan Reynolds' way of taking all of these Fox cast-off heroes like Blade and X-23, Gambit, if you see on the screen here, and then there's Elektra, who does an appearance. It's really funny because they kind of closed the door on her character from those days at Fox. And Jennifer Garner does a really good, you know, she's a good spirit, you know, about the whole thing. So I'll give her credit on that. So that's it for Elektra.
No, she sounds like a massive shit talker to me.
I think she's very nice, but she knows when she's in shit and she has to deal with it. It's like, all right, when I play golf, right, and I play with somebody new, I know my level of capabilities, right? So I don't want them to expect greatness. I don't want them to expect that I'm going to hit the ball 250 yards. So right before I get on the first tee, I look at them and go, I just want you to know, I play like absolute shit. You're in for the worst day of your life. Have at it. And then I proceed to play my round. And I play okay. But that's what Jennifer Garner did with this film. She was like, before you see this piece of shit, I just want to let you know it is a piece of shit.
She stepped up to the tee and then didn't hit it past the ladies' tee box.
Exactly. So number one. Had to drop her pants.
Yep.
And it sucked. So
shucks.
She was doing a preemptive strike to let people know that this movie sucked. So the next film that we've got that it's going up against tonight, I watched this when it came out. I think it was 2011, Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. It's the sequel to the original Ghost Rider that Nicolas Cage did. It was more big budget. And I remember watching this. And it's just the oddest duck of a movie. Of all the movies on our bracket, this is I told my wife, it's a Marmite of superhero movies, which Marmite is this thing they have in Europe and in Australia that is like, it's like Vegemite in Australia, but it's Marmite in the UK. It's like this vegetable spread stuff, and people either love it or they hate it. And it's very polarizing. And I think that Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance is one of these movies that you can enjoy it for what it is, or you can really hate it for being a stupid piece of shit. And I would agree with you either way.
Dude. There's nothing not to enjoy about this movie.
Okay.
Look, I was a little segmented in watching this thing.
Yeah.
But let me just tell you, every single time that I like got back into, you know, my attention was drawn back to the movie. Every single time, I didn't ever once think to myself, well, why is that happening? And what are they doing? And what is that? Like, there was no time to think about that stuff. And even if I had, it didn't matter because what was happening was fucking outrageous and crazy and zany. And like, you know, we went through this thing in the 90s where everything had to be like, well, we came out with Oreos. What about Oreo Flavor Blaster Extremes? With, you know, we dumped them in sour Pop Rocks, and then we covered that with whatever, and it's badass. And you know, like some kids come skateboarding in and they like kick their mom in the face and grab their Oreo flavor blasters and whatever. Like, and we did that for everything.
Yeah.
And like, that's what this movie felt like, was 1.5 hour long commercial for like Indian motorcycles. But if they had to be like, what about Indian Motorcycles Extreme?
Yeah.
Badass. Never once during this whole thing did I even give one second thought or worry to what I potentially might be missing in story. Because this movie won't allow you to do that at all.
No.
I didn't see the original Ghost Rider. Let's get that out of the way up front. I don't know if that would have helped or hurt this viewing of Spirit of Vengeance.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would have mattered either way. If the first one was anything like this, then I wouldn't have given a fuck about what was happening in that movie, and I didn't give a fuck about what's happening in this one. It was just like, remember we watched The Room?
Yes.
And it was so confusing that it almost, like, you almost couldn't look at it like it was a movie.
Yeah.
You had to look at it as like a deep exploration into the mind of a madman, and you couldn't, like, you can't take The Room and compare it to like Casablanca. Casablanca is a movie. Casablanca is a film. Casablanca's art. The Room was whatever that was. And that's kind of how I felt about this is like, this isn't a movie. This is like putting fireworks into a clothes dryer and then just sit there. And if I did that, Greg, if I invited you to my house and I put a bunch of fire, I was like, watch this. I light a bunch of fireworks and I put them inside my dryer. And I was like, pull up a chair. We watching this shit. You wouldn't sit there and ask me like, why are we doing this? You wouldn't sit there and ask me like, well, what's the motivation behind whatever? You wouldn't ask me, well, what's the story behind this? You would just sit there for an hour and a half and you'd watch these fucking fireworks going off in my dryer. And at the end of it, you'd be like, that was badass, dude. We should do that more often. I'll bring the fireworks next time. I'll bring my own dryer. We'll make this a yearly thing. And that's what Ghost Rider should. Every year they should have put out another movie exactly like this. They could leave Idris Elba out of it because he's too good to be doing things like
he
this.
He was very too good for 2011. He wasn't where he is now, so he was available. But
he
isn't really good in it. And that's what's crazy is he feels out of place. Idris Elba really feels out of place in this film because he is good and he's giving it his all, even with a kind of cheesy French accent. He's giving it 110%.
It's like, I wasn't really buying it. I mean, I know there are black people in France, and I know that there are black people outside of France who speak French.
Yeah.
But like, he ain't one of them, and it's real obvious. Can I ask about the phenomenon of, like, okay, we've got a character, and we're just not quite sure how to make them seem like weird, so let's give him some fucked up looking contacts. And there's nothing, man, they do this all the fucking time. They did this in that John Travolta movie, the weird Battlestar Earth or whatever. And it, like, it's kind of like, if you need a character that's like a teenage zany nerd, like, put him in red Chuck Taylor high tops. And now all of a sudden we as an audience know that this person is like weird and zany.
Yep.
It's like, is it the same thing with these fucking contact lenses? Like, we need some immediately apparent way to show the viewer that this person's just slightly off.
I don't get it. What's so weird is that he is in another Marvel film, Thor, the Thor series, and he plays a character named Heimdall who guards the Rainbow Bridge. He's a one of the gods, and he has contacts in that make his eyes like whiter, and it's like, doesn't make any sense. Because my wife, the first thing she did, she goes, well, I've seen him in Thor. Is his eyes really like that? I said, no, I've watched him in The Wire, and they are not. Trust me, I've seen him in a lot of
The Office.
I've seen him in a lot of other things. That's just these two movies. So maybe those movies are contacts, and this is his real eyes. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Have we ever seen Idris Elba and his real eyes in the same room at the same time?
You never know. But
okay, but listen, what I said about Ghost Rider, tell me I'm wrong about all that.
No, I can't. And so this movie, the problem with this movie is it makes the biggest hypocrite out of me, with when it comes to superhero films. And it's like, when it came out and I put it on, you either have a good attitude about these things, and it's far from boring. Like we said, Elektra, I just want it to be over. With this, I didn't want it to end. I was having such a good time. And I did rewatch the original, and the original's not bad. The cool thing about the original is Peter Fonda plays the devil, and he rides a motorcycle. Easy Rider type throwback. It's got this thing. Sam Elliott is in the original as like the Ghost Rider, the first Ghost Rider, which the first Ghost Rider, by the way, real quick, a history on the comic is that here on the left is the original Ghost Rider was a cowboy that rode a ghost horse and dealt justice. But as times changed and they relaunched it, later on, they bikes were in after Easy Rider, and they were inspired by Easy Rider. So Ghost Rider became a Harley riding, skeleton that's head on fire thing for Marvel Comics. So in the original movie, Sam Elliott plays like the original, which is really good, but it's more polished. It's more that typical, like we watched with other Marvel films. The one thing that sets it apart from a Daredevil or a Morbius or any of these other origin story superhero things is that Nicolas Cage is just unhinged. He does have moments where he does his thing, and that does set it apart and make it enjoyable. But it has Eva Mendes in it, but it's definitely still your kind of formula type of superhero film. Enjoyable. This, on the other hand, and there's a thin plot where, again, we're talking about a child who is the chosen one that they have to protect, and all these people want to get a hold of him, and Idris Elba's trying to keep him safe, and he knows that the Ghost Rider, the writer, can keep the child safe because the devil and his minions are afraid of the Ghost Rider. So they enlist the help of Nick Cage's Ghost Rider, Johnny Blaze, for all those who don't know, and they go together to defeat the Mephistopheles, or Rourke, as he's called in this. So they team up to take down the devil and save the boy and his hot mom. And so that's,
I didn't catch any of that. Didn't give a fuck.
but that's generally the idea behind it. What happens after that is just one of the people that promoted the movie I saw in the trivia said it was a combination of Lord of the Rings and Mad Max, and that's kind of what it is. It's got this mythological thing about it, but then it has this unhinged Mad Max-esque type feel to it, where it's like, we don't give a damn about what we do in this film. It's just going to be fun, and you're going to enjoy it, and I sure as hell do. It's just that silly stuff that can appeal to the basis of desires, of guns, explosions, humor. When I knew when I was going to like this film, it was like right when it starts and they're doing the animated, Nick Cage is narrating, and he talks about the stunt he did where his ass fell out of his pants and he did a 360 ass jump, and they have the animated figure with his ass out. I'm already laughing. It was when he was talking about the devil comes in many forms, and they show Stalin and John Wayne Gacy and Jerry Springer. And it's like, it doesn't take itself seriously. I like that. Let's have fun. And it looks, the feel of the film, because it was filmed in Romania, for a third of the budget that they had on the first one, the film itself looks like, it looks like it's made in Romania. It looks like it's made on a shoestring budget. That's the charm. It has this weird B grade film quality about it. Like you're watching something. It was filmed in Romania and Turkey, and you feel like you're watching something made from a foreign country. It doesn't seem like an American film at all. It just seems bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, I would have be totally convinced that this was all overdubbed after the fact and like into English.
Spaghetti Westerns?
Yeah, like if I didn't know Nick Cage spoke English and the rest of these bozos I didn't know anything about. Crazy. So, yeah, you're absolutely right, because we've talked about that before where, like, what you, the output of your work needs to kind of match up to the thoughtfulness behind it. And when those don't align, you get this weird thing where you're trying too hard and your movie's schlocky, or you're not trying hard enough and you're like insulting your audience. But you can also try really hard and you can have a good, you know, output. And those are our classic films that had a purpose, were executed and delivered on, you know, every level. And then there's movies like this where what they leaned into was how goofy this whole thing is. And I mean, I'm really, obviously, little talk about Ghost Rider there at the top was a little over the top, like Ghost Rider is, but I'm being serious in that at no time was I confined or felt chained down by any semblance of plot. Yes, what you described is technically true, but like, no one gave a fuck about that. And I know that that story is not why you liked it. That story is not why I liked it. They could have been trying to move beer from Texarkana to Atlanta or anything, like any, like literally drop any plot from any other movie.
I can see Nick Cage going in, give me a Diablo sandwich and a Dr. Pepper. I'm in a goddamn hurry.
The boys are thirsty in Atlanta. But
exactly.
It wouldn't have mattered. You could have made this the plot of Home Alone.
Yeah.
And I'd have been like, oh, I didn't catch that. No. All I caught was fucking dude on a flaming motorcycle.
Yep.
And listen, you can say all you want about, I mean, the budget on this thing was almost $60 million, and it made $150 million.
It did.
So first of all, good for them.
Yeah.
But second of all, it'd be easy to overlook like some little things in this, but I loved the fact that he's riding a regular ass motorcycle and regular ass clothes. But when he turns into Ghost Rider, it becomes all like carbon encrusted because it's on fire and the motorcycle, you know, he says at one point to the kid, like anything. I thought that was a cute scene. Like he says, well, if I'm riding it, then it is affected the same way I'm affected. And he's like, so would the same thing happen if you were in a tugboat? Stagecoach? You know, I forget all the things he named, but you know.
Yeah, like, the exchanges he has with the kid, it's, you know, they have other movies like this where there is a chosen one and somebody has to escort him. But the kid does a really good job of the, I love the scene where Nick Cage is apologizing to him. Like, dude, I'm so sorry. You know, you got drug into this and you got to deal with my ass. And she's like, dude, he goes, dude, you're way cooler than most of the guys she brings home. Shut up. And the whole scene, that's another one. I read too. So the scene where he's just sitting there, it's things like that that makes the movie so enjoyable. He could be sitting there having any conversation, but no, he picks up a pitcher of water and he continually drinks from the pitcher like it's completely normal. I read in the trivia that he had a urinary tract infection. So he was doing that for real. Drinking tons of water. It's so Nick Cage.
Naturally.
It's so Nick Cage. And then the scene where he's talking about, do you piss fire? And then he says, like a flamethrower. And they show the scene.
They do this every now and then. And some of them I found funny and some I found cheesy.
Yeah.
But like, again, it's this breaking the fourth wall kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge towards the audience. And, you know, in contrast to movies that try to be one thing and they end up being another and they are insulting to me, I felt like I was in on the joke for this one.
Yeah.
I felt like they did enough kind of looking it over me and going, right?
Yep.
Right? Like, isn't this kind of what you wanted out of this movie? And the answer to that is yes. Now, can we talk about, is this during and maybe this era is still going on, but like Nick Cage was a legit actor, yeah. Like leaving Las Vegas and, you know, you can go through his filmography, but there becomes a line of demarcation between like actor Nicolas Cage and Nicolas Cage.
Right.
Is this part of that era where, like, if you'll just pay me some money, I'll show up and do whatever? Is this part of a resurgence of Nick Cage where he had been high, gone into a valley, and this kind of brings him out of that? Where are we at on the Nick Cage trajectory at this time and currently?
So it's such a weird career because, you know, we have the things like Wild at Heart that we covered in when we did the David Lynch films. And other films like Raising Arizona, Vampire's Kiss that he did early in his career, Valley Girl. And so we know that he's this great actor, but if you look at his videography, it goes from something that's like huge, like National Treasure, Book of Secrets, to Bangkok Dangerous, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. And then he does Kick-Ass, and then he does The Sorcerer's Apprentice and Season of the Witch. And it's like, and then he did Drive Angry, which is, I think, a pretty fun film. I just don't think, as an actor, I don't think Nick Cage gives a fuck. I really don't think he cares.
He's an Academy Award winning actor.
And he's a relative of the Coppola family. He's in one of the most like royal families of cinema there is. But again, nobody associates him with that because he's beyond that. It's not like he's Tom Cruise or even, you know, even somebody bigger than that as far as like somebody that's considered a great dramatic actor. You know, he's not in that realm, but he's like this chameleon that just does these crazy things. The one that he did that I really liked was the one he did with Pedro Pascal, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, where he parodies himself. He's Nick Cage playing Nick Cage over the top. It's insane. He's in this movie, kind of highlights what he can and can't do in a film. And it's definitely worth a look if you're just interested in insanity and just having a good time watching a film. The people that I've read the negative reviews, they just find this stupid. I would say if anybody came to me and went, well, I don't like the way the camera moves really fast and his face is in the center, I didn't like all the stupid jokes, I want my Ghost Rider to be a little bit more dark and taken seriously, this was a joke and it was stupid, I would be like, I agree. But I liked it and you didn't. I liked it for those reasons. And my thing is I'm a huge Ghost Rider fan. When I was a kid, in fact, I got from the 70s. These are ones I've had when I was a kid. I love Ghost Rider. He's one of my favorites. And I would have liked to have seen a great Ghost Rider film. Maybe we'll get one day that takes the character seriously. I don't mean this is a great Ghost Rider film.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
But it doesn't necessarily follow that. In the original Ghost Rider, the bike is cleaner. His head is clean. It's like a regular skull with flames on it. In this one, I appreciated that everything was crusty, that everything was melted, that he had black smoke coming off of the fire that gave it a realistic feel. It was gritty. And even though that's not technically Ghost Rider, I fell in love with it. My wife actually, she asked me if it was over. She went, so do you like this one because it's a lot more like the comic? I went, it is nothing like the comic. And that's why I'm a hypocrite, because I should hate this film. I should be like, you screwed up my character, because like I said in Elektra, they screw up Typhoid Mary. They screw up Elektra, to be honest with you. But it's the fact that it's not fun. That movie's not fun. This movie, they screw up everything that the comic does, but it's fun. It's unbelievably fun to me. But I can see why people hate it. I do. Before we get into that, we were talking about Nick Cage, and I have one clip that I just absolutely, I think this scene is, to me, one of the best in the film. And when you see it, it basically is that it typifies the Nick Cage-ness of this movie. It's where he's interrogating a guy trying to find where the devil is, where Rourke is, and so that they can save the kid. So this is Nick Cage from Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
You talked to Kerrigan.
I talked to a lot of people. Hey, I got what we need for those shakes, my friend.
Kerrigan must have told me about that thing that killed his men last night, huh? Yeah? That thing is inside of me. See, you're a bad man. And this thing, the Ryer, he feeds on them and he's hungry. He's hungrier than he's been in years, and that's why I'm shaking. Because right now, the only thing standing between you and the Ryer is me. And he's scraping at the door. Scraping at the door. Who am I if you don't tell me what I want to know? I'm going to let him out.
It's just brilliant.
It's so good. This shouldn't have been on the list.
You know what? And it is on the list because it's like, what, 4.7 or whatever, or 4.3 maybe on IMDb?
Fucking bunch of ghouls.
34 on Metascore. They're just people that don't. 4.4 out of 10.
Dude, heaven forbid you just try to have fucking fun with something anymore.
I know.
You know, oh, sorry. Sorry we didn't stick a corn cob up our own ass while we made this movie so we could be real, real important to everybody. Like, yeah. You're making a fucking superhero movie.
Exactly.
You already started with the more serious version of this.
Yeah.
And you said it was fine. I'm not seeing it. You said it was fine.
Yeah.
But, like, if you're going to do another one, you'll never match the tone of it. So you either got to be a little more serious or a lot more silly. Fine. But my God, people, life is fucking short.
Yeah.
And to keep yourself from feeling joy unnecessarily just because you think that, I don't know, like what? You don't want to be the person who walks into a group of people and says, you know, I really liked Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. And them all, you know, look down their nose at you as they drop their martinis or something. Like, you're not in that crowd, asshole. Like, you didn't come from the opera and then sit down and write a review of Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance and be like, well, you know, compared to the great masters of tortellini and what the fuck ever. I know that's a noodle, by the way. But what I'm saying is the people, like, you don't live in that world. You don't have to be so highbrow and pretentious and act like, you know, the only good things in life are all neatly trimmed along the edges. Like, this movie isn't that. That clip we just watched is unhinged. And Nick Cage, who'd you rather see give that performance?
Yeah.
Like, it was great. You could have told me what this was about. You could have showed me like clips of this and like blurred out the face of the actor.
Right.
And I think I would have just naturally put Nicolas Cage in there because it's perfect for unhinged he is, how unhinged this movie is, suits him. And you know what? Suited me. Just fucking fine.
So, you know what the interesting thing is that as I was watching it, I thought that the directors or whoever was behind this mess was a European as well, because it looked like had that feel. I did find out that these guys have done other films, and I think that their aesthetic was perfect for that early 2000s, like you talked about. But nowadays, they don't fit in anymore. But I started looking up their IMDb, and it was two guys called Neville Dean and Taylor. It's Mark Neville Dean and Brian, or Neville Dine, I don't know, and Brian Taylor. And they did several films. And one of the ones they did was the movie with Jason Statham, the two series of the Crank films. And if you've never seen these, they're the exact the basic type of film as Ghost Rider, and these are very polarizing films. It's a movie where Jason Statham dies or he has a heart problem, and the only way to keep himself alive is constantly give himself electroshocks.
Hell yeah.
And he, through the whole movie, you see the poster where he's got the jumper cable. That literally happens in the film. where he has to keep jump starting his heart. But when he does, he gets this massive burst of energy and he kicks massive ass. And it's just this crazy, psychotic film. And that's these two directors. No, the Crank films are both R-rated. So you can imagine what they did with that, with the freaking gore, the level that they could reach. And going back to where I said that these two movies that we're reviewing tonight had similarities, that's one of the similarities that these two have. Neville Dean and Taylor wanted to make this an R-rated film. And that's the one thing that I would say about this film that I kind of regret. I would like to see their R-rated version of this, because this is already over the top. What else could they have done with Ghost Rider just going to town on all these bad guys? Okay, but
on the other hand,
yeah,
maybe, and I agree with you to some extent, maybe though, you have the opportunity to be like sillier and more creative in that silly space if you know from the start that you're going to limit yourself to like a PG-13 rating. Then you start to creatively think about, okay, well, what are our jokes and what are our entertainment value that fit in this box?
Right.
And maybe that's what makes it so fun, is because it's not, there's nothing in this that's like outrageously nasty or dirty or offensive or anything like that. A rated R movie, you start to kind of inch towards too much violence, too much gore, too many, you know,
right,
sexual innuendo,
yeah,
whatever. But like, when you do that, and yes, I mean, maybe separately, it would be nice to see that movie. But if you start doing that, then you lose all of the fun, zany sillinesses. You go from that to like gritty, grimy film noir kind of fun, dark comedy.
Right.
This wasn't a dark comedy like this. I mean, do they bill this as a comedy?
I don't. It's got Marvel, dark fantasy, superhero, supernatural fantasy, action, adventure, fantasy, sci-fi, thriller. No comedy, but it's definitely funny. There, one of the scenes we didn't even talk about that I literally laughed out loud is the character Blackout, who originally is a character, bad guy called Kerrigan, but he is transformed into, they don't even really mention his name, but he's a character from the comic called Blackout, where everything he touches decays. I want to hit the best scenes in the movie is where he just gets his powers and he's in the truck and he's touching all the food that's in the bag and he grabs the apple and it disintegrates and he grabs another thing and it disintegrates and he grabs a Twinkie and it doesn't. He unwraps it and it stays perfectly a Twinkie and he goes, huh? And he eats the Twinkie. And that's this movie. So if you can't handle that, then you probably can't handle the movie. The movie is ridiculous, but it's ridiculous in all the best ways. You know, like you talk about the where he gets on the back of the truck and the truck starts catching on fire, and the way he dispatches of the devil at the end by throwing him up in the air. It's just the final scene is where I do the comparisons to Mad Max, because if you watch Mad Max, where they have the last 30 minutes is like everybody on the freeway just going freaking bonkers. I could watch that scene right now and just watch him jump from truck to truck and just taking out idiots. It's so much fun. And that's why George Miller, when he did those Mad Max films, that's what he was capitalizing on. He knew that people would love that high adrenaline. It's like why people go to see a car race. People say, okay, they go for the wrecks. When I was watching the Indy 500 this year, I was the speed and the intensity and the movement.
Sound.
The wrecks are a byproduct of it, and that is exciting, but it's the threat of the wreck that keeps people watching those sports. It's the threat, and that's what this movie does, and I absolutely like. So, yeah, I adore it. I think it is so much fun. And yeah,
show me a person that doesn't want to see a human being jump from one moving vehicle onto or into another one, and I'm going to show you a class A grade A, great American dipshit. All right. Because if there's one thing we all love, freedom, fucking cold beer, and watching people jump from one moving vehicle onto or into another. Now, and I don't care if it's car to car, car to truck, train to airplane, helicopter to boat. Don't give a fuck. I want to see human jumping from one to another. But like, if you can, if that's not you, if you're listening and you're thinking to yourself, I could take it or leave it, you're a dipshit. Like, get on board with the rest of us. Go rent Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance and just, you know, take your pants off, watch the movie, have a good fucking time. You don't have to touch yourself. You can.
Piss
you
flames. Don't have to. Piss flames.
Yeah, he pisses flames. I mean,
yeah.
The intersection of knowing exactly what you are and delivering exactly what you are.
Yeah.
This film lives exactly in the middle of that diagram.
Yeah.
You don't go on IMDb, give it a 3 and say, well, you know, there's no 12 Angry Men. Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
12 Angry Men was cinema.
Yeah.
This is fucking Oreo Flavor Blasters Extreme fucking fireworks in my dryer. Okay?
Exactly.
And you know what? Both of those are fine. 12 Angry Men is great.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, it kind of sums up kind of what we do here on Box Office Battles is we talked about at the beginning that we do bad movies. And that's a different type of, you know, genre that we discover that we have fun with. And there's a place for those, and there's a place for masterpieces. And I love watching my favorite dramatic films. Behind me is Color of Money. It's one of my favorite films. I love Scorsese. I love the dialogue. I like the way that it's just set up. I love the way that his movies flow from one scene to another seamlessly. There's no pretentiousness. There's not a lot of gimmicks. It's just face value. This is what you get. And it's just entertainment. And Ghost Rider is a different type of movie. It's as far from Scorsese as you can get. And there's a place for both of those in cinema. There's a place for both of those in the movie theater. You just have to know what you're getting into. And if you don't like it, that's fine. That's what movies are for. You can walk out of somebody. I've seen like the new Star Wars has come out. My wife and I went and seen it, The Mandalorian and Grogu, which is based on the Mandalorian TV show. Wife and I went and seen it. I thought it was, I wouldn't say it was great, but I thought it was, as a Star Wars movie, as a fun time in the theater, we got some popcorn, we laughed, watched some spaceships blow up other spaceships, and we walked out. And then I found this online campaign of hate toward this film.
Oh, of course.
Because like I said, I can get behind if you think Disney is ruining Star Wars, but let's go movie by movie and judge it on its merits and not just say something's bad because that's the cool thing to do. I don't know what you're expecting from this film other than
you went on the internet. Like,
yeah, That's the problem. So it's like, I was like, wow. And you know, and of course it affects the box office. People feel that it's a bad movie because they're told it is. And I wouldn't say, like I said, I don't think it's the best Star Wars movie ever, but it's like you're generating hate for something that doesn't need to be. And if your opinion truly is that you don't like it, that's fine. But let's leave room for other people to enjoy something that you don't like. Let's stop with the, oh, I don't like it, so it's trash for everyone. Your opinions, and I'm saying this to everybody out there who watches this show or whatever other movie podcast that you have, your opinions are your own. They're not universal. They don't belong to everybody. They belong to you. That's why they're fucking opinions. So the next time you have something to say about a movie that other people like, keep that shit to yourself. Because what we do on here, we do have criticisms of the movie. But as much as I dislike Elektra, if somebody likes Elektra, like you apparently do, or Madam Web, I'm not going to call them a moron. I personally don't like it, and this is why. but it doesn't mean that applies to everybody out there. It applies
absolutely.
To me. Absolutely. Applies to me.
I'm never, ever, ever, ever gonna back down from liking Madam Web. And every time you try to push me one way, I'm gonna push 1,000 times harder the other direction. And every time you put a single drop of hate into the world for Madam Web, I'm gonna put 1,000 gallons of love into it. You are not going to stop the train that is the Eric Dillo 2026 All-Star Celebrity Race for the Cure to get Madam Web back in the theaters so that people can take a fresh look at a fresh movie that had fresh ideas, was ahead of its time, and people just didn't get it. It was like if you only ever listened to the radio and you never saw black and white TV and then you moved right to color, you know, that shit would fuck you up and you'd be like, color TV sucks. I don't, this is new to me. This is intimidating to my intellect.
Right, exactly.
It's so like you naturally would be averse to it. Same thing happened with Madam Web. I don't blame it on the movie. I blame it on society, a failure of society to embrace kind of visionary things like that. You know who else was a visionary that got killed? Jesus.
Oh my God. Don't do that. Anyway. But the thing is that at the end of the day, this show is a democracy. We let our fans vote for what they like. We vote ourselves who moves forward, and that's how we determine who we think, our opinion, again, is the better film, or in this case, the worst film. So after having...
We have the courage to embrace democracy.
Yes.
It just doesn't... like Mark Neville Dean and Brian Taylor had the courage to make a film like this.
Exactly.
And I guarantee you, when they walk into a room of other directors who look down their noses at the two guys who made Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, well, we all had fun watching that shit.
We did.
We have to vote for the worst of this. This is the weird part. We are enthusiastically on board with Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
Yes. It would win.
Means it would win. We have to vote for.
Yeah.
We have to vote for the other, right?
We have to be the biggest loser for this bracket. So it is the loser for this week is definitely... Electra.
No.
I did that on purpose. But yeah, the loser this week is Electra, the worst Marvel film of this week, and moves on in the bracket to its next opponent. Yes. So if we would have had another bracket and Ghost Rider would have been in it, I think that we could agree that we would have moved that movie on. We could put it up against Casablanca.
Interstellar or sure, I get that.
Well, the thing is it ended, and it's so funny is I found myself justifying it to my wife going, I can't explain why I'm having so much fun, but I would put it on again right now.
Did you ever think to yourself that she enjoys watching you have fun?
Yeah, no, she thought it was crazy, and she didn't have anything bad to say about it. But like with Elektra, it was like, is anything going to happen? And that was like, it was the total, because we watched them in the same day because I was running out of time. We had a busy weekend. So I'm like, babe, I got to watch both these movies tonight. So we're starting with Ghost Rider. And that was the problem, I think, because we started with Ghost Rider. We watched this crazy mile a minute film. And then we put on the other one, and it was everything, just the pacing turned into slow motion. So I think that's what happened. But anyway, so we only have one more round to go, or one more battle to go in the first round. And that's going to come up in a couple weeks here. This one, I have not seen Kraven the Hunter, but I've seen Morbius and I've seen all the others. So I'm sure it's not much different. But we have Kraven the Hunter that is
Kraven Cox.
He is another. Maybe. Well, I've not seen
I think that's his name.
I've not seen the movie, so I have no idea. But Kraven the Hunter, that's another spinoff of a Spider-Man villain Don't ask me why. Kraven the Hunter is a massive villain in Spider-Man, but he's got his own movie. We'll be going up against the Josh Trank version of the Fantastic Four with Miles Teller and Michael B. Jordan. It's a different envisioning of Fantastic Four altogether. This is the second incarnation that they tried to do on the big screen. The third one with Pedro Pascal recently came out at the movie theater, so they've given it a try. This one did so poorly at the box office. I'm not going to say anything about the film. I'll let you decide how you feel about it. But we're after this, we've watched them all, and then we can move on into the final four. So one more to go.
A big exhale at the end of
that's it.
The end of this.
So we hope that you'll join us here in a couple weeks when we discuss Kraven the Hunter and Fantastic Four to finish out the first round of the worst Marvel movie on Box Office Battles. Again, if you want to email us, boxofficebattles@gmail.com. You can watch us on Twitch at Box Office Battle Pod or on YouTube at Box Office Battle Podcast, and catch us on Facebook at Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. And with that all being said, turn it over to Eric to say his final words for the evening.
We know that you have a choice in podcasts, and so we appreciate you guys listening to Box Office Battles with Eric and Greg, or Greg and Eric. You can say it either way. But until next week, you guys, just be like the two guys that made this Ghost Rider film and just embrace every piece of joy, every piece of anything that gives you meaning, gives you happiness, and gives you a sense of self and purpose. Embrace that. Do it the best you can. And until next week, be excellent to each other. We'll see y'all then.